Knife Talk is sponsored by Evenheat, the manufacturer of the finest knife heat treat ovens available. Find your next heat treat oven at evenheat-kiln.com. So welcome to another episode of Knife Talk. Now this one is a little different, as it's a tools and materials special, where I'll be speaking with makers and manufacturers of the tools and materials that we need to make our knives. So there's going to be a few guests on this show, but first up is Bill Benke. So welcome to the show, Bill.
Thank you. Thanks for having me. Really looking forward to it.
Okay, cool. So can you tell the audience a bit about the kind of knives that you make?
Well, most of my knives they're all forged, 99% of them. I like make my own Damascus steel. Hmm. I've been making knives since the mid-80s, so over 30-some years. I'm 71 years old.
Wow. And still swinging hammers.
Yeah. No, I feel good. I like smaller knives. Knives that are meant to be used daily. In fact, all my knives are meant to be used. Some are art pieces, but then some are, have a purpose.
Yeah. So, yeah. So I've been seeing your name pop up on posts from some of my favorite knife makers for some time now. As well as the wonderful knives that you produce, you also produce a fantastic looking file guide. So can you tell us a bit about those file guides?
Okay. I made one just out of necessity because I was kind of saw that I get my work close, but it wasn't just the way I liked it. So I went ahead and made one for myself. And this has been a good 10, 12 years ago. And I started out with some steel and just heat treating that. But I found out, the steel doesn't hold up to grinding or files or whatever. So I thought I'd incorporate carbide, and I thought, well, maybe aluminum would be good. So aluminum is very strong, and a lot of people kind of shy away from it because they figure it'll bend. Well, yeah, it'll bend, but one good peculiar thing about aluminum that it sticks to steel, and you only need to scrub your screws very lightly, and that'll hold really well. But in the last 3 years, I've come out with the stainless steel bars just to accommodate some people that have been asking for stainless. So I make them out of a 416 stainless. All my bars are CNC machined, and I have the carbide ground, and I assemble all of them, guides myself. And I include Allen wrenches, because my screws are 1/4-20 UNC threads, and there's a lot of people in metric countries that don't have access to that. So I include the wrench so they can use the guide.
Oh, great!
And yeah.
So is the aluminium or the stainless steel? So that's got a carbide sort of outer shell, then I assume, is it, which stops the grind from digging in?
Yeah, guides are approximately 3 3/4 inch long, 3/8 of an inch wide, and 1/2 inch tall. The carbide is 3/32 thick by 5/16 by 3 inches, so it's a lengthy piece of carbide there.
Right,
and
yeah.
It is a 92 Rockwell, and it's only impervious to a diamond. You'll see some bright spots on it for some aggressive grinding in that, but you're not going to really phase that carbide at all.
So Jeremy from Homestead Knives posted a video on his Simple Little Life YouTube channel. I think it was just today, actually, of himself using one of your file guides. And I know Jeff Fader's always singing your praises too. So when did you start? When did you start making these guides?
In selling them, probably about 6 or 7 years ago, but I really got I was making them on my own mill and by hand, but then I had access to a CNC machine, and about 5 years ago, I started having them CNC machined, and that really took care of things. You know, I just I got a lot of good consistency. Well, I had consistency with my own work, but it was time consuming. And so this way I can pick up any two, you know, pieces of the pair and they'll fit, you know, regardless. I don't have to match any of them. That was really the blessing of having a CNC machined.
Yeah. So those tolerances are really dialed in there then, I assume. Yeah.
Yeah. It's just a time saver and just was the right ticket for me.
Okay. Well, you mentioned on your website that you also use the guide to line up handle scales too. So how does that work? How does that work?
Well, you just flip them around. You know, anywhere you want any two surfaces to be in the same plane, you can use that guide because the carbide is on the same plane. You're establishing that plane. So let's say you want to put a swage grind on your blade, you know, on the spine part of it. You just flip it up and put it where you want your belt to stop grinding. You can hit both sides just right on. You know, you're not going to be off on one side or the other. You just have to watch the angle that you're grinding at. And with your bolsters as well, you know, or your scales. In fact, I soldered my bolsters on, and I don't use any pins. And I've been complimented on my soldering jobs and that. But I use the file guide to where I want the bolsters to rest, and I, you know, I clamp the bolsters on with the vice grips, and then vice grip clamp, then pop off the file guide, and then solder, and they'll line right up. Or if you're just doing scales, you do it the same way.
So they'll butt up against the guide, yeah.
Yeah, there's a lot of uses for it. It's just, I guess, your imagination is what's going to limit you to what you can do with it.
So do you have any more tools which you've made which you're considering selling to the sort of the knife making community?
I've dabbled in some vices for holding the handles when you're gluing up a stick tang. That'll clamp the handle up to the guard, and that. I made them and I wasn't really pleased with them. I didn't know if I should pursue it anymore, and I didn't really have much. I don't know if there's that much call for it and that. But I have some ideas on another type of file guide, and that's one to do integral bolsters, something along the line of V blocks, so you can do the whole 360.
Wow.
Of that, and I think that'll be. Good. I'm going to talk to a machinist and with some ideas, and we'll hash some stuff out. But I think I can come up with something like that. And I know I'd like one.
Yeah. And generally, it's the case of if you want something, there's other people out there that will too. Yeah.
Yeah.
So I know you've been making knives since the mid 1980s, as you mentioned earlier, but.
Yes.
During that time, have you seen an increase in people making knives, maybe over the past decade? Is this something growing?
Oh, definitely. Yeah. It's. I think, you know, just in the recent years that Show Forge and Fire has done the knife business tremendous help, you know. I've been at shows and they'll say, have you seen that show? Yeah, I've seen the show. Is that how you do it? It saves me a lot of talking, explaining what I'm doing too. Recently there's been a good flood of that, you know, because people are aware of a custom knife.
So what got you into making knives?
Well, I was making muzzle loading guns and black powder. And I was intrigued with I've always been intrigued by a blacksmith or blacksmithing and that. Never really tried it till I got into gun making. And I went to some seminars where the guys were making the furniture to trigger guard and butt plates by forging. And I just fell in love with that, you know. And then I got into a blacksmith group, a club, and there's one guy there making Damascus. And, wow, is this cool, you know. So that's just one thing fed to the other, you know.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I mean, I've been looking at your Damascus today online, and your feather Damascus is stunningly beautiful. It's absolutely lovely. So do you have a particular pattern that you enjoy making more than another, maybe?
I like them all. I find them all a challenge. I haven't done them all yet, and I think there's something I want to, you know, it's kind of like on my bucket list. But I like a good, you know, it's a simple pattern, but it's a ladder pattern. And I use dies to print my patterns in the steel. The Germans did that a lot. And you can control your patterns really, really good by, instead of just rough grinding them or anything, that you get a nice workmanship like look to your, with your work, where everything's uniform and that, and that's what I like. Yeah,
very nice. So
you've got, looks neat.
You've got a tool for every job.
Just about, you know. There's the other ones I want to make, you know. I'm kind of fascinated by a jelly roll pattern too. There's so much you can do with that. It's a lot of labor getting that thing rolled up, but once you have it rolled up, then you can do a lot with it.
Yeah, yeah. But as I say, the stuff that I've seen online that you've done is just amazing. So where can people find you? If they want to order a knife or maybe one of your file guides, where's the best place to get hold of you?
On my website, that's www.BillBehnke.com. is BEHNKE.com.
Great stuff. Well, thanks very much for chatting, Bill. It's been lovely to talk about your work.
Well, thank you.
So next up is Quinn from Evenheat Kilns, the guys who make my favorite heat treat ovens. So welcome to the show, Quinn.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
So first off, tell us a little bit about Evenheat, the company.
The company? All right. Well, we started in 1948, so we've been around quite a while. Initially, it was started for China painting kilns, and it would have been... started as that, and it kind of spitballed. They kept getting bigger and bigger into ceramic. Then glass started, and as of late, knife has been our flagship, if you will, as far as what models we make the most of. We still obviously make the glass, ceramic, and some other heat treat machine shop style ovens, but for the most part, knife is where it's at. Other than that, it's just a small family business that continues to prosper. So 1948, it looks like this year will be what, 70 years?
Congratulations, that's amazing.
Thank you.
So what's your specific role there?
My specific role, besides kind of doing a little bit of office work, I'm primarily in the back, and I build the electrical panels for the units. But I've kind of worked all over the shop floor. So I kind of got my fingers in a little bit of everything for the most part. But day to day, I'm normally back in the panel room, building the electronics and putting everything together to make sure these things function the way they should, as far as literal readout and tap controllers and all that fun stuff we're into right now.
Yeah, yeah, okay. So you've already mentioned, you know, it's not just knife makers that have Evenheat kilns. So, I mean, you've also got a great range of ovens for knife makers. But what are the other groups of makers outside of knife making that use them? I mean, you've mentioned ceramics and glass, but what sort of industries?
Yeah, we have a decent footprint in the ceramic industry, and then our second biggest is going to be our glass line, which is actually pretty big. We offer a lot of glass kilns, and the fun thing with the glass is we get to deviate from the ceramic and the knife kilns. If you look at our models on our website, they all kind of look the same. Because obviously to make the product work for the end user, we have to stick with some certain design elements that really make it run the way it should. Where with glass, they're not dealing with such high temperatures. They're doing different things with different material and tools that we get to have a little fun. And we've got a lot of clamshell designs where they open on the lid as well as the chamber. And those are really popular as of late. So the glass industry is fun because we get to, we get to think a little more about what we want it to, look like in the end. Where we do that with knife, we will have some new stuff coming out in knife, so keep your eyes peeled for that. But that's probably the perk of the glass.
What would you say is the most popular model at the moment for knife makers?
At the moment, if I had to put my finger on it, it's going to be a KF18 tap with solid state. And as of late, probably with the Bill Burke mod as well. I don't know if you're familiar with that or any of your listeners are, but it's basically our conventional knife oven, if you will. And then what we do is we wrap a 1/8-inch layer of extra insulation between the brick and the external jacket just to keep the jacket temps down. And that kind of took off as a single order job for Bill himself. And then some people found out about it, more people found out about it. And then now it's literally a modification that we will do on a new oven. So, but a KF18 tap with a solid state is probably the golden boy out of our lineup.
Yeah. Okay. So, I mean, you just mentioned modifications. Do you ever see any sort of customer modifications, things that people have done themselves to their ovens?
We've had people put in extra thermocouples, you know, to monitor temps across the longer ovens, some of our extreme depths. And then you'll get the guys who want to do inert, which we don't. We obviously don't make any inert kilns, but they give it a shot as far as how that works. I don't know. They never really get back with us. But you see some mods here and there. Maybe they'll change a door latch system. You know how it is. Any guy in the end, especially the knife guys, they're pretty intuitive. They'll tweak it if they don't like it.
Yeah, yeah. So I've been looking on the site, and I can see your salt bath ovens. Is there much of demand for them with knife makers? I suppose maybe salt makers?
Yeah, we've gotten, when we go to the shows, we do the ice show in Kansas City. We obviously do Blade down in Atlanta, done a couple small hammer-ins and things like that. When we go, people know what it is, and they know how to use it. As far as demand, I bet you since we've introduced it, we've probably made about a dozen, give or take. So it's moving, but I think some of it, realistically, is I may be wrong, but I feel like sometimes when I go to the shows, there's some misinformation as to just how dangerous it really is, which, don't get me wrong, it can be, you know, it can be a handful, but if you play your cards right and you pay attention to what you're doing, the guys that use it, especially we made a video with Tim Zawada, and obviously this dude, he loves the salt bath aspect because the heat treat is quick and it's very, very, very accurate all the way through the blade, where, you know, you get wrapping foil and stuff like that, you lose some of your consistency in your heat treat. But we've had a decent demand for them.
Okay, cool. So, I mean, talking about demand, I mean, I've seen personally a big uptake in knife making over the past few years. Now, it seems to me, and I'm not sure whether it's just because I've sort of got myself into that community, into this world, but it seems to be becoming a very, very sort of popular thing to do now. Are you seeing that too?
Oh, yeah. Yes, for sure. Not only in demand for our products, but we've done the Blade Show, International Blade Show down there in Atlanta for, I think I started going in 2007. And when I went, there was a little bit of room left in the actual convention hall. And then last year when we went, it's actually flooded out into the hallways of the gallery. So, yeah, between the Blade Show, size increasing, then obviously we get our orders are up for knife in the last 5, 6, 7, 8, 9 years. And not only that, the Instagram, we're big on that, at least following. We try to post as much as we can, but the amount of these, I think it's primarily young men on Instagram, is just, it's incredible. I mean, it's everywhere we turn. Anymore at work, it seems like knife, 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 which is really cool because we enjoy it. But yeah, it's the industry, I think, has really taken off.
Yeah,
big time.
Instagram is, yeah, it's just gone crazy for knife makers. It's just a great way to show off your work and, you know, to get involved in a community as well.
Yeah, and I think too, part of it doesn't require, I mean, I shouldn't say this because I don't make knives, but I feel like it's a hobby that even at a beginner standpoint, a guy, if he is really interested, can get into it with a little bit of overhead, but it's not something you're going to spend a whole bunch of coin on getting right into. You know, I feel like it's one of those hobbies you could creep into, and the more you enjoy it, the more you can, you know, spend on machinery and take classes and whatever they do to perfect their craft. But that's just me from the outside looking in.
Yeah. Okay. So after every show that I do, I get messages from people in primarily in Europe, but always outside the United States, asking where they could buy an even heat oven in Europe. So what are the options for European knife makers?
Oh, European knife makers, that's kind of tough for us. there is a company, and I'm blanking right now off the top of my head. I might be able to find an order for one, but it's called Art for Fun. I want to say it's Norway or Sweden. They carry our knife stuff. But the hard part for us anymore is, it's not hard, but it's time consuming and sometimes, cost inhibitive due to the CE, manufacturing that we have to abide by. So we do offer through Art for Fun, but I don't know that we have another distributor actually on, I don't know what they call it, the continent or Central Europe or however that works. But we do have them. But other than that, we don't see a lot of knife going to Europe in general. The only real big international or outside the U.S. that we get is Australia. There seems to be a lot of them that go there for the most part. But as far as Europe, I hate to do this, but I really don't know. If you call the office, they can tell you. They'll be happy to tell you where to get one from. But being the guy in the bag, not shuffling through much of the paperwork, I'm not quite sure.
Yeah.
But, I mean, it's something, obviously, we would love to get over there. And I think another part, too, is, you know, when our European distributors and some of our other markets, when they order quite a large order of kilns. That way, by the time they leave, they get them in the container, they get them across the ocean. You know, they make it worth their while to get a surplus of kilns, where at least in the knife market, for the most part, it doesn't seem we ever – we have a couple distributors in the U.S. who order a mass quantity, if you will, but it's quite rare. Normally, it's custom off build to order for a certain guy and it drop ships. So Europe's – we want to do more in Europe, but it's sometimes it's a little tough, if you know what I mean.
Yeah, yeah. And that's a good point, actually, you mentioned about the sort of the CE mark on European stuff.
Yeah.
Because I know when I ordered my oven, I couldn't have the – I had to have the relays and not the solid-state switches, you know? Is that a safety thing or?
To be honest, I don't know if that's a safety thing or what as far as CE goes, but for us to get the CE mark, we actually have to assemble a full unit and send it to a place, I believe it's in Illinois, and they will test to CE specifications. And sometimes to do that, like I said, it gets kind of cost inhibitive to have you test every model, and if you only sell, you know, a handful overseas every year, it's kind of tough to justify getting the CE mark. To sell maybe 3 or 4 kilns a year to Europe. So
yeah, makes sense. Yeah.
It's just kind of the name of the game. But we have a couple. We do offer the KF18 and I think the 22.5 in both CE marks. So you can still get one. Hmm. And to be fair, you know, they're gonna run just as good as anything we would have domestically. Basically the same unit, just a little bit different on the internals as far as the electrical enclosure goes. But
yeah,
you know.
Okay.
For what it's worth, it's still a great unit.
Yeah, I think I've got the 22.5, and yeah, it heats up quickly. It you know, it retains heat very well. It's perfect. It's perfect. In fact,
good.
I love the oven, but let me tell you the one thing about my even heat which I'd like to see changed. And I think you're the guy. You do the electrics. You're the guy.
Yes,
so,
I do.
I want a button that allows me to toggle the alarm on and off on the fly. So, I mean, I know it can be changed as a system-wide setting, but if I could do it on the fly, it would be really handy because specifically when I'm tempering, I often need to leave the shop or I may do a temper overnight. That means that the alarm goes off and it just stays on and it just beep, 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 beep.
Right,
beep,
you're talking, you know? The little loud alarm on the bottom of the panel?
Exactly, yes.
Are you talking the alarm on the board?
When you get to the end of a cycle, you know, the little buzzer that goes off the alarm.
Right. Yep. Yeah. As of now, I mean, that's something we could consider possibly. You can turn it off through your OEM circuitry on the board, but that's something we could consider.
Yeah.
That's the first I've ever had a complaint on the alarm. That makes you feel better. Normally, everybody loves that thing.
Not a complaint, but I don't know. Just something that I'd like to see. It would be very handy for. I mean, I bet a lot of people do tempering cycles overnight. Just having that one little button to say no alarms on this one would be great. And you know,
right.
Then that it's not going to wake you up.
Yeah, well, that's something to consider. I'll actually jot that down.
Cool.
Because that's something we could probably handle.
So what is seemingly simple, like an oven, obviously isn't. And even heat, they've embraced technology. You've now got Wi-Fi connected ovens. You've got touch screens and so on.
Yep.
So what's next?
As far as what's our next new and improved setup?
Yeah, I mean, where could you go from this?
Yeah.
You know, it's
As far as controls go, we're, you know, obviously we had to get into the touchscreen market when that kind of showed up. SDS came on scene probably about 3 years ago now. Mm-hmm. And, to be fair, at least for us, it was a breath of fresh air because, you know, it, at that point it was 2015. You know, it's time that the control on the kiln look a little more modern. Not to downplay our RMs or our STPs, but, you know, they look a little dated. So we're working with them. I can't let any cats out of the bag, but there's possibly a new twist on the tap that may be out maybe this year, probably next year. But we're working with them a little bit on something there. Other than that, we did redesign a couple of elements of our not heating elements, literal elements of our knife kiln line. So keep your eyes peeled for that. That's another thing I can't really showboat a whole lot yet because it's still in R&D, but it'll look slick. I think people will take to it big time. It will be in Atlanta. Cool. So and it's, you know, we're trying, and at some point, you know, you got to learn to wait when to leave well enough alone. But for the most part, we like to keep tweaking things, keep making things better. Yeah, we've got some stuff coming out to keep your eyes peeled on. But I can't, unfortunately, I just can't drop the ball on them yet because they're all kind of in testing and all that fun stuff. But it should be fun, and I think, like I said, I think we'll probably get a pretty positive feedback because what we like to pride ourselves on, at least for the most part, is we like to consider – we work with a couple knife makers that we know of that we've met from the shows, and we like to hear, hey, what's good and what's bad, you know? So what we like to do is we like to take into consideration of the end user and hopefully design a product or tweak a product that they'll enjoy and makes the process even better. So we're pushing to, you know, instead of turning out the same stuff every day, you know, hey, let's have a little fun. Let's make some stuff these guys might really be interested in. So
yeah. Okay, cool.
It's cool.
Well, I'm going to leave you to it so you can get back to making more ovens. But thank you so much for taking the time out, and hopefully we speak again soon. Next up, we've got Dan Corey, who's better known as Basher Dan Grinders and Knives on Instagram.
Let's talk about one of our sponsors, Tormach. To get great razor-sharp and repeatable edges, you're going to need a Tormach. To find out more, go to tormach.com, which is T-O-R-M-E-K.com. Okay, let's get back to the show.
So welcome to the show, Dan.
Hi, Craig. Yeah, thanks for asking us to come on the show.
Not a problem. For those who aren't aware of what you do, can you just let us know? Give us a sort of a brief introduction.
Yeah, so I'm a new knife maker, or I say a knife maker. I've not actually made a knife as yet. I'm just in the process of making the tools to make knives, which I've been doing for the last 2 years, I'd say. And I've virtually made everything that I think I need for producing knives. Like I say, I've had a bit of a dabble, but I've never sort of finished a knife off because I'm still building the tools.
Yeah. So you've done the complete opposite to what most people do, which is dive in, make a knife, realise it's terrible, then have to invest in lots of equipment. You're starting with making the equipment.
Yeah, well, I kind of struggled finding the stuff that I wanted, and I've got an engineering background, so I'm an ex-engineer, if you like, and I found that most of the stuff was in the States, and it was very difficult to get hold of, and us in the UK, I feel that it's quite limited, so I thought, well, I've got ideas of the kind of tools that I want, why don't I make them, and that's where it all started, really. I'll admit, I didn't envisage it being like up to 2 years where I'm still building tools and designing and putting them together and stuff. But yeah.
Okay. So when you say your background was engineering, was that sort of industrial fabrication? What kind of background was that?
Yeah, it was more like engineering production what I did. But I've done a whole range of engineering. So I've done machine engineering, engineering production in terms of light fabrication, right up to heavy sort of steel fabrication, and kind of fell out of love with it really and wanted a career change. So I've since picked it back up as a hobby And obviously I enjoy it more as a hobby because I can pick and choose what I want to do and how I want to do it. Whereas if, you know, when you're in employment, it's quite difficult, but yeah, I'm really enjoying it.
So there's far less pressure, obviously. Yeah. So, I mean, I've got one of your jigs, one of your grinding jigs, which is fantastic. It's rock solid. It's made beautifully. And you can see the amount of attention and care that you put into it. So why knife making? Why services for knife makers?
Kind of going back to how difficult I found it actually finding the correct tools, the right tools that I wanted, most of them in the States. And we can get hold of it, but it's like twice, sometimes three times the price of the actual product because of, you know, the import taxes and stuff that we get hit with. Mm. And like I say, going back to designing and making my own tools, everything that I have made and I do make is designed and processed and used by myself. Mm. And I quite like that because there's no point in making something that you're just going to make and for selling. And I don't kind of make me stuff to sell. I'm making the stuff for me. And if people want it, then I'll make extra, if you like.
Yeah, yeah. Well, as I say, I've got a grinder of yours. Well, a grinding jig, rather. And I know a number of other sort of guests that we've had on the show are using stuff that you've made as well. So what other tools are you making?
So I've made a grinder. A 2x72 grinder, which that was, I'd say, the most complex thing that I've made. Took me quite a long time. It actually took me 7 months just to design.
Jeez. And
yeah, it weren't like a just a scribble on the back of a fag packet kind of thing. It was a full on sort of. I did my homework. I did my research. And I drew it all like I'd say the old fashioned way these days. So, you know, set square and drawing board. And I made a bit of a model of it and then I digitalized it all in CAD. So that was 7 months from designing to building. And then I did a further sort of 3 to 4 months testing. Making sure that obviously everything was running true and straight, and made a few tweaks here and there, and it was a long process.
I
started with the grinder, as it happens, and then naturally I moved on to the grinding jig, the bevel jig, which obviously goes hand in hand with the grinder. Then I went on to the hand sanding jig, and I found that when I was doing my research for that, trying to look for a product rather than, I've heard stories of people like the fingertips, a lot of pain in the fingertips when they've got a lot of surface sanding to do.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
I thought, there's got to be something I can make. And what pushed me to actually, I had a design and I thought I weren't like 100% with it, and I went and visited Sandy Young.
Oh, yes.
Young's Knives, and Sandy had quite a bad accident where he was hand sanding and he slipped and he got quite a deep cut, and that was it. That was the turning point. I just said to Sandy, I said, you know what? I said, you've done it for us. I've got a design there and I'm going to make it and I'll send you one and let me know what you think. So I did that. And that's where that came from, basically.
Yeah, yeah. And I mean, I've also got a small wheel attachment on order with you. So I'm really looking forward to that arriving. But have you had any requests to fabricate something just really unusual?
Not as such. What I try and do is I try and sort of limit, you know, what I take on, because I don't like being put under pressure. In terms of, if people ask me to make something, yeah, I can have a go and, you know, I can design something, but of course, everything takes time. And what I don't like doing is I don't take orders because I feel as though I put myself under pressure. And, you know, at the end of the day, I'm doing this as like a hobby. And I've done a couple of bespoke bits, like, for instance, one of my grinding jigs. I had a guy who I follow quite closely who asked me if I could make him a bespoke grinding jig. And we went through a bit of a design and he was happy with it. So I made him one and, yeah, he's over the moon.
Fantastic.
So I will do bits. It's just I don't think I'd sort of do anything major because I've not really got the time. I'm limited for time as it is.
Yeah. Well, that was my next question, actually, because you said that you've made this grinder, and I've seen the pictures on Instagram. It, you know, it's fantastic. It's one of the better design grinders that I've seen. So,
cheers.
I get email every week. Once the show goes live on a Monday, I generally get a bunch of emails over that coming week from people asking where to buy a grinder, people getting into knife making. Where do I buy a grinder? And as you've mentioned, particularly in Europe, you know, the US seems pretty well served.
Yeah.
So I'm pretty sure a European maker wouldn't be short on customers, you know, if they started making grinders and almost sort of production run of them.
Yeah. I have made quite a few. And the problem that I get is because there's so many variations that you can have with a grinder, people say, oh, well, I want this sort of size motor, or you give them a quote for VFD drive as well as, you know, your contact wheels on and stuff like that. And then you get people coming back saying, well, I can use skateboard wheels. And you're like, but skateboard wheels won't really cut the job long term. And what I try to do is I try to make my stuff that will last a long time. And you find yourself taking a lot of time in putting these quotations and things together, like a bit of a package for somebody. They'll have an idea in the mind of what they actually want, but they'll try and chop down, and then they end up with something that won't last them as long because they're using lesser materials, if you understand what I'm trying to say.
Yes.
And I found that I don't really push my grinder because it takes quite a bit of time to actually make, you know, process, because I process everything myself. Everything I make, I am the only person that processes it. So if anything's wrong or inaccurate, I've only got myself to blame. I like to think myself as a bit of a perfectionist. If I've done something wrong, I'll scrap it and I'll start again.
Said like a true knife maker.
Yeah, but without making the knives yet. I've been doing a few bits and bobs for another guy, and I'm sure he will vouch for I'd say my attention to detail. He's Adam from Road Knives. I've made him quite a bit of stuff just recently, and it's like, yeah, you know, send him a message. Your stuff will be ready, and then a couple of days later, no, it won't. I've scrapped it. I'm starting again because you know I'm not happy with it, and that's the way I work. You know, it's got to be right. If it's not right, it's going in the bin, and I'll start again.
Yeah. Well, that's the way to get the best product, surely. Yeah, definitely. So, yeah, you're obviously a fan of knives, of good knives. So whose work do you see which excites you?
Flipping heck to name but a few. I follow a couple of guys quite closely because I feel these people, by no means I'm not sort of saying that nobody else does, but me personally, these are the guys that I follow closely because I feel as though they have similar traits to myself, where if something's not right, they'll put it right. And the first one being Chris Smedley of CSR Knives. I've got a couple of Chris's knives, and the attention to detail is just absolutely spot on. Really, really nice, crisp, perfect lines, everything about it is, you know, is right up my street. The second one is Guy Stainthorpe. And I'm into a bit of hunting as well. I don't do as much as I like, so this is kind of where the love of knives comes from for me, is around the hunting and stroke bushcraft stuff. And Guy makes a lot of hunting knives, and his work is superb. I seen him at the UK Knife Show last year, and he had, you know, his stuff on show, and it's just absolutely beautiful stuff. Really, really nice.
So are those the kind of knives that you'll be wanting to make when you're, you know, taking more time to make knives yourself? Will they be sort of hunting knives, sort of woodsman knives, that kind of thing?
Yeah, bushcraft and hunting knives, I'm not a fan of large knives. Personally, for the kind of stuff that I do, I've no use for them. They're just not my cup of tea. And I come from a bit of an outdoor background as well. I've spent a long time in the scouting movement in the UK. I spent a long time on a campsite as a volunteer running the site. I must have been a volunteer there for 20 years or so. And obviously the hunting comes for a hobby side of mine, which I do in the winter.
Cool. So pretty soon you're going to be making your own knives, and you know, getting to use them as they should be used, which is great.
Yeah, fingers crossed. I hope it all works out. I hope I can make knives and as well as I'm making my tools, but it's a steep learning curve, as I've found.
Yeah. So you've already mentioned that, you know, you don't particularly take orders for the tools that you make. But if somebody wanted to contact you to discuss some sort of product development or making something for them, which would be the best way for them to do that?
Instagram. I do most of my stuff on Instagram. I just find it really easy to work, and you know, people get in touch with me on there. They can send us a direct message or, you know, comment on one of my photos, and obviously I get the notifications. So it's really easy on Instagram.
Yeah. So on Instagram, you're basherdan_grinders_and_knives. Is that right?
Yes, that's correct. Yeah.
Great stuff. Yeah. Well, hopefully, you know, people will be getting in touch, and hopefully you'll be taking too many orders that you will find some time to get into the workshop to start making your knives.
I'm just in the process of building a new workshop, as it happens, because I've outgrown my home workshop, and I'm nearly done. I'm nearly in there. So when I get in there, that's it. Hopefully I'll hit the ground running.
Sorry, I'm pretty much in that sort of situation at the moment. So I'm renovating my workshop. And what I'm finding is I'm picking something up to put it somewhere else, thinking I need to put it over there whilst I do this. Then I can move it to this new place. And before you know it, everything is just having a bit of a disco round, you know, because you're moving something, then you need to move that to put something else there, then you move that to put something else there. It's just a nightmare. It's taken me so, so long.
Yeah, I feel your pain there, Craig. I mean, you know, when you move from having such little space to big space, the thing that I'm not struggling with, but I'm trying to work out is how to best place stuff. So I'm thinking, you know, of having a station for grinding, a station for clean work, a station for the bandsaw stroke router work. You know, it's quite it's quite hard setting it out.
Well, what I'm doing with the new shop, which I haven't really seen other people do so much, is at the moment I've got benches all over the place. So, you know, some behind me, some in front of me, some on back walls and so on. So the idea is to have one long back wall with one sort of stand height bench. And across that wall, actually having sort of partitions. So I'll have a grinder in one, I'll have a drill press in another, bandsaw in another, and that kind of thing. So the idea is that I can sort of contain the mess for that particular tool in that one little station, you know? But yeah, let's see how that goes. I'm such a messy worker. I'm pretty sure it won't work out that way, but it's just a constant battle trying to keep things tidy and clean.
Yeah, isn't it just? I mean, I often look at people's photos and stuff, and I don't think I've seen anybody as clean as Aaron Goff.
Oh, jeez.
Yeah. Wow, that place. Aaron's definitely a one-off for keeping the place absolutely spick and span. And I think I'm pretty much like you. You know, I start off well, and within minutes, it's like a bomb site. Yeah.
Sandpaper everywhere. Yeah. Yeah.
Absolutely.
Well, thank you so much, Dan. I'm going to let you get back to your shop because I know you've got tools to make. And hopefully we speak again soon.
Yeah, great stuff. Really appreciate you asking me to come on, Craig. It's great. Thank you.